Imagine many of you will probably have heard the interesting results of a survey that was conducted recently to try and find who is the greatest monarch in English history. And much to everyone's surprise, the person that was voted the greatest monarch of English history is King Athelstan. Now, most people thought that it was likely to be Queen Elizabeth I, but King Athelstan beat her to top place. And it surprised many people because many people are unfamiliar with King Athelstan. If you're not familiar of who King Athelstan is, and I have to confess, I wasn't sure either, he ruled from 925 AD to 939 AD, and he is considered the first true king of a united England. And he was instrumental in booting the Vikings out of England. So he united the various different kingdoms here in this country together. So anyway, King Athelstan, the greatest monarch in English history. Well, today, if you haven't already picked it up, is called Christ the King. And it marks the end of the church's liturgical year. So the church's liturgical year runs from Advent Sunday, which is next Sunday, all the way through to Christ the King. So this is the end of the year, if you like. And it's significant that the final Sunday in the church's calendar is called Christ the King, because we remember who Jesus is. He is the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. And next Sunday, Advent Sunday, when we will have a joint all-together service at 10:30 a.m., so just note that it is in the notice sheet, we begin the season of Advent. And in the season of Advent, what we're doing is we're looking forward to and are waiting for that day when Jesus the King will come and return to the earth and rule in power and glory. So we have the end of the year and the beginning of the year bookended by this theme of thinking about the kingship and the rule of Jesus Christ. Now, Madonna said this about Jesus. She said, "When I was growing up, Jesus Christ was like a movie star. He was my favorite idol of all." And Napoleon Bonaparte said this, "I know men, and I tell you that Jesus Christ was no mere man. Between him and every other person in the world, there is no possible term of comparison. Alexander, Caesar, Charlemagne, and myself founded empires. But what foundation did we rest the creations of our genius? Upon force. Jesus Christ founded an empire upon love." And Albert Einstein said, "I am a Jew, but I'm enthralled by the luminous figure of the Nazarene." And the novelist H.G. Wells said this, "I am a historian. I'm not a believer. But this penniless preacher from Galilee is irresistibly the center of history." So even people who would not consider themselves followers of this penniless preacher, as H.G. Wells described him, still recognize that there was something special and extraordinary about Jesus. And the tradition of observing and recognizing Christ as King actually goes right back to the very beginnings of the Christian faith. It goes right back to the Magi, when we're told that as they found the infant Jesus in Bethlehem, and as they offered him the gifts they had brought, they kneeled down in front of him to worship him. So they recognized that in this child was something unique and special, that here was the King that they had been searching for. And when we think about Christ as King, we recognize that the kingship of Jesus, the rule of Jesus, is very different to that of other rulers. And Kate was sort of making that point at the very beginning of our service. And Pilate recognized that there was something very different about Jesus when he came face to face with Jesus. Now, in Jesus' day, we have to remember that kings were extraordinarily powerful and influential people. For nations, the king was usually the main means of securing order and peace. The king was someone who was to be honored and respected and served and feared in equal measure. He was a person of utmost importance. And it was a he generally. There are exceptions. There are some very powerful female rulers down through the ages, but the vast majority have been male. So what does it mean for us to describe Jesus as king? Well, this was the question that Pilate was wrestling with when he came face to face with Jesus. See, Pilate was the governor of the Roman province of Judea, and he served the most powerful king, the most powerful ruler of his day, the Roman Emperor Tiberius. And Pilate knew what a king was like. He knew about the power kings held, the authority they wielded, the unquestioning obedience that kings demanded. And one of Pilate's duties as a governor was to test and judge and, if necessary, condemn anyone who would consider themselves a challenge to what the Romans saw as the rightful rule of the emperor. So anyone who came along to challenge the emperor's rule would be brought to trial and punishment. And this was something that Pilate would have done many times before, and it was something that he wouldn't have had any qualms about. So when Jesus is brought before Pilate, the accusation that's being made against Jesus is that Jesus is a revolutionary, that here is Jesus claiming to be king of the Jews. In other words, putting himself in a position that the Romans would say actually belongs to the emperor. But for Pilate, the idea that this bruised and beleaguered man that is dragged before him could somehow be a king must have seemed absolutely ridiculous. Because Pilate knew what kings looked like. He knew how they dressed. He knew how they behaved. And the person standing before him did not look like a king that Pilate was familiar with. Nevertheless, Pilate does his duty and he asks Jesus that question, "Are you the king of the Jews? Or do you claim to be the king of the Jews?" And Jesus' answer to Pilate is effectively, "Yes, I am. But my kingdom is not of this world." Jesus says this, "If my kingdom were of this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to Jewish authorities." Now, for Pilate, this must have seemed like a very strange response, because for Pilate, the word king or the name king would be a political term. So Pilate would have thought of the emperor. He would have thought of the empire with its borders. He would have thought of Rome's mighty armies that had conquered much of this empire. And he would have thought about the structures of government that went into ruling an empire, thinking about taxation and all those sorts of things that go with ruling a kingdom, ruling a nation. So the idea that a kingdom could be not of this world, the idea that this is a kingdom without borders, to Pilate probably made no sense at all. So Pilate has a clear image of what a king should look like, and Jesus standing before him doesn't fit Pilate's understanding of what a king looks like. And so while Pilate in the end does allow Jesus to be crucified and on the cross puts above Jesus' head a sign in three languages, "King of the Jews," Pilate himself did not believe that Jesus was guilty of the accusation that was being made against him. Pilate actually believed Jesus was innocent. And as you read the scriptural accounts of the trial between Jesus and Pilate, you can see that Pilate did try to get Jesus released. But at the end of the day, Pilate was far more worried and far more concerned about what the crowd said than doing what was right and letting an innocent person go free. You see, Jesus is not a worldly king. His power is not from this world, nor is it meant to be exercised in the way that the world exercises power. And again, Kate sort of asked that question, who is the most powerful person in the world today? Which is actually a really fascinating question. I'm sure we could have a long, interesting conversation about that, whether it's a political ruler like the President of China or President Putin or the President of the United States of America or possibly Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon. I mean, we could have a fascinating conversation about who really holds power, Mark Zuckerberg, who set up Facebook. But you see, Jesus's kingship, Jesus's rule is very different to that we see in the world today. Because you see, most kings, most rulers are used to having people serve them, whereas Jesus is the servant king who gave up the glory and the splendor of heaven to come into the world and to be born as a human and to live as one of us. And Jesus is the king who was not born into wealth or power or privilege, but was born into extreme poverty, whose first bed was a feeding trough for animals. And Jesus exercised his power by serving others, by forgiving others, by healing others, by giving to others, and by sacrificing himself for others. And his power is the power of truth, the power of faith, the power of hope, the power of love, the power of life itself. He is the king who chose as his disciples the people who were going to be closest to him and continue his work and his ministry once he had left the earth, not the greatest or the brightest that the society at that time could offer, but ordinary people like you and me, people who, to be honest, would often have been overlooked by the rest of society. He is the king who got down on his hands and knees to wash his disciples' smelly, dirty, dust-encrusted feet at the Last Supper. He is the king who broke down the barriers of religion and culture, nationality, age and sex. He was the king who would spend time with tax collectors and sinners, the people that the world rejected and despised. He is the king who heals the sick and makes people whole. He is the king who raises the dead to life. He is the king that was not afraid to speak truth to power. He is the king who was willing to sacrifice everything for the sake of you and me. And he is the king who, as nails were driven through his hands and feet, cried out, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." He is the king that has ultimately defeated the power of death and rose again and lives and reigns in glory and power and majesty. And he is the king, which we'll be thinking about during the season of Advent starting next week, who will one day return to the earth in order to judge the world. He is the king that stands before you and me today and says to us, "Will you come and follow me?" See, if we have given our lives to Jesus, then our allegiance has to be to him above all else. And the word allegiance apparently comes from a Latin word, allegio or allegio. And allegio means to bind. So you bind yourself to someone or to something. And in the feudal times, you would bind your allegiance to the lord of the manor or to the king. So as Christians, when we say yes to Jesus, when we choose to follow Jesus, what we are doing is we are binding ourselves to Jesus as Lord and Savior. And as followers of Jesus, we are called to a life of faithful obedience and love. And we do this not because we're compelled to do it by Jesus, but because we choose to do it. We choose to respond to his invitation of love. Because Jesus' love does not force or compel us. Instead, he invites us to walk in his light and his love. So that question that Pilate asked to Jesus, "Jesus, are you the king of the Jews?" Well, there is another far more important question that you and I need to ask ourselves today, which is, "Jesus, are you the king and ruler over my life? Do I truly give you the allegiance that I am called to do?" The reality is that some of us here, the answer to that question will be definitely yes. We have bound ourselves to the life of Jesus. We have asked Jesus to be the Lord, the ruler over our lives. But there may be some of us here today who, although we proclaim Jesus as King, actually recognize that we haven't fully given our loyalty or our allegiance to Jesus. Maybe there are aspects of our lives where we know that Jesus isn't the ruler over all of our lives, because there's parts of our life that we choose to keep from him. And maybe the challenge there for some of us is that actually the invitation from Jesus is that we surrender all of our lives to him. And it's possible there may be some people here today who actually have never really truly said yes to Jesus. Maybe some people who've never said, Jesus, I want you to be the king, the ruler over my life. Whatever the answer to that question, is Jesus king over your life, may be, I want us just now, as we finish, to have a time just to be still for a few moments, and then to offer our lives back to Jesus and to ask Jesus to be the ruler, the king over our lives. So let's just keep a moment of quiet before we pray together.